All right, we're back in a new place.
I wonder how, yeah. Because I wonder how many podcasts we start with that. All right, we're back.
Yeah. Botswana.
Yeah, we sometimes do that. New York.
Unique New York. God. All right, so we left the last time while we were recording an episode about Karakwe at Kingspool, and now we're at Vumbura Plains, and we're going to talk about Kingspool. But I think the first thing that we should really do is talk a little bit about the flight from Karakwe to get to Kingspool.
Yeah.
Because Karakwe is kind of in the southern part of the delta, as we mentioned in the last episode. And to get to the Kingspool, which is in the Linyanti Reserve,
which is where?
Which is like in the far northern part of Botswana. It's just on the
eastern part of the delta.
Yeah, north. It's northeast of the delta, exactly. We had to. So you take these charter airplanes. They're these small planes called caravans that fit about 12 people. And they land on these airstrips where the guides from the lodges are just making sure that there are no animals on the airstrips themselves and clearing the runway, so to speak. And we flew pretty much directly north, and we flew kind of over the Muremi Game Reserve and over Chief's Island, which is where Mambo is, which is the camp that we're going to later on this trip. And the first place that we landed was in the Jau Reserve, which is in the northwestern part of the Okavango Delta. The northern part of the delta tends to have a good bit more water than the southern part, especially in the drier parts of the year. So it was really cool just flying. I mean, it was so cool flying over it, right?
It was it's incredible. And it's kind of fun because there are, it's a little bit like an Airbus in that you're picking people up and dropping people off at each stop that you make, and people are coming from different lodges, and it was nice kind of getting to chat with people for a second while we're on the ground and kind of hearing, you know, what was it like here? This area is drier, so what was their game viewing like? And so on. But as we were flying over, I think we did two stops maybe.
Yeah.
We had a good amount of time in the air, and it was
probably 20 minutes on each flight or so, 25 minutes.
Yeah. And I wasn't really expecting the flights to be anything. I think it's a hammer cop. We're again recording with the sides of the room are open, so you can hear maybe the hippos in the background. But I wasn't expecting the flight to be kind of anything, you know, out of the ordinary, just like a normal charter flight from A to B. But I got a little bit emotional, honestly, when we were on the up in the air, because looking down, you realize, or it's really clear to see that there are basically no roads. There are a few, and especially when you're coming into and out of the airstrips, you can see pretty clearly the roads demarcated. But other than that, I was just completely floored by how much wild land we were flying over that isn't even touched by roads. You know, a lot of these camps have water activities, and so you do like a aluminum bottomed boat, or you even do a Makoro, which is like a traditional Botswanan dugout canoe. But you think about how little of an impact those things have on the environment, specifically the Makoros. I mean, and with so few roads, it just blew my mind.
Yeah, and no,
how wild this space is.
No, like no human settlements of any kind whatsoever, apart from the lodges. And there are so few lodges that I think I saw one lodge while we were flying that entire time.
Why? Maybe speak a little bit to that. Why are there so few lodges? Why is it possible to have so few roads? And
well, I think we touched on it briefly the last time. It's that the Botswanan tourism model is low impact, high income. So low volume of tourists, but then it is quite pricey to go to a lot of these places and areas, which, I mean, it kind of means that some people won't get the opportunity to travel here. And we are absolutely aware of how lucky we are to be able to travel to these places. But it does, it just does mean that you have these massive, massive parts of land that are completely untouched. I would say to this, the next time anybody who's listening to this podcast is in a plane, I would love to hear how long you can fly over a piece or a stretch of land that you can see no signs of human settlement, because I think that is really, really hard to come by. Like
impossible.
In the States or in Europe, it's virtually impossible, right? If you're flying over the Alps, you might get one or two places, but apart from that,
or the ocean.
You just see farming, you see settlement, like you see buildings, obviously. I guess the only other place is the ocean, but this is one of the only times that I've really felt like I'm flying over true, a really large portion of true wilderness. The nice thing also about these flights is that we were flying at about 8,000 feet, and you can still see stuff quite clearly. So you could see elephants. I saw a massive herd of buffalo that was around this small like water source, and you can see giraffe. You obviously can't see the very small things, but you know, when you land, you see some of them maybe.
Yeah.
We then flew across and landed at this airstrip where we're in the area now, at Vumbura airstrip. So flew directly
the
over
Jiao
the main
concession? No, sorry.
Jiao we flew from the Jiao concession to the Vumbura concession. Yeah. So we flew over the main channel of the Okavango Delta, which for me, I thought that was really phenomenal.
Yeah.
It was incredible, actually, because lots and lots of water. And I got excited for Vumbura when I landed at Vumbura. But then we carried on across quite a big open Mopani section. And we had the Silinda spillway was on our northern side. So the Silinda spillway is the main channel of water that goes between the Linyanti Reserve and the Okavango Delta itself, the Linyanti Reserve being fed by the Kwando River.
Mm.
And let's talk a little bit about Kingspool, because from the airstrip then we went to the lodge, to Kingspool, and Kingspool in itself was completely different environment and habitat to Karokwe, but in its own right, ridiculous as well.
So ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, now that I'm thinking about this, I would say it was an emotional day because we arrived at Kingspool, and that is the first safari camp that I ever went to when I came to Africa my very first time when I was 12 years old. My family did a safari with our cousins, and we came to Kingspool. And that was the first time I saw an impala and a zebra and our first lions and
zebra.
My first elephant. And I hadn't really, I mean, I was excited to go back because the camp has changed quite a bit since then.
When was that again? What year was that?
2005.
And who were your first, or who were your guides at Kingspool?
So we had a South African couple named Brian and Chantal, and they were a blast. The parents, we separated the group, so it was six parent couples with Brian, and then Chantal had all the cousins, which is seven girls and one boy.
Yeah.
So it was like the girl vehicle.
That's funny, because the first time I had ever heard about the Linyanti Reserve, like more than in just reading it in some sort of a, I don't know,
book,
in sort of a, yeah, book or whatever, or seeing it on a map, I'd heard from the Linyanti, from Brian and Chantel, who were also my first trails guide teachers, or some of my first
in
trails
South
guide
Africa.
Teachers, when I did my trails course in Botswana, in Mashatu.
Oh, yeah, right.
And
right.
I remember Brian, just, I don't know, Brian's this really quite like eccentric, but in a very, very good and passionate way, guide who's been a guide for a very long time.
Yeah.
And obviously,
since I was 12.
Yeah, at least since Adley was 12. And he, just in the middle of the day, kind of took some time and explained to some of the guys that were doing the course with me and me what the Linyanti meant and what the area was. And basically you have various channels, the Linyanti channel or river, and then the Linyanti marsh, which is fed by the Kwando River and which eventually flows into the Chobe.
Delta.
Into the Chobe, yeah. And then there's the Silinda spillway, which if the channel overflows, flows into the Okavango Delta. It's along a fault line, so actually sometimes the flow of the water is reversed. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. Again, I'm not totally sure on exactly how that works, but I do know that it is reversed, and that because of that there is very varying levels of water.
Yeah.
And when we went now, the water was at its highest. But anyway, the first time that I heard about this Linyanti area was from Brian, and he just spoke about these massive congregations of elephants, something that I think I'd only seen before in Chobe, which is a few hundred kilometers east of where we were when we were there at Kingspool.
When you said he just spoke about it with such passion, and he just said it's like the most amazing place and you have to go, and
yeah,
why it's so great that you were just kind of captured by it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Brian and Chantal were our guides, and we just had the most amazing time with them. We were there in December, so there weren't quite as many elephants then as there were now, but I mean, it was my first safari, so like an elephant was in a monumental game drive making event.
Yeah.
And we just had the, like the best time with them. And so when we got to the lodge, it's right on the Silinda River, right?
No, Linyanti.
It's right on the...
Well, there's a pool there called the King's Pool. That's why it's called King's Pool Lodge.
Yeah.
Right.
It's right on the
Linyanti. It's on the Linyanti Marsh, basically, yeah.
So we got there, and the lodge is right on the...
A swamp. It's Linyanti Marsh or swamp or river. It's one of... I mean, it's all the same, really, because the water goes into a swamp, which is also a river, which is part of the Kwando, Chobe, Zambezi river system,
so
if you will.
So we get there, and the lodge is right on the water, and it looks out on this pool, and I just had this memory come back to me straight away that... When I was there, when I was 12, the hippos were calling like all night, and we got there and we were having tea, and the noise of the hippo, we couldn't believe that noise was coming from hippos. And I hadn't really remembered that memory, and only standing there did that come back to me. And I just had this moment of like, oh my God, like if my 12-year-old self knew that, like I'd,
you'd be,
you know,
doing
I've
this.
Been, I've been lucky enough to turn this into, you know, my job and my livelihood and my life. It just felt so full circle. So
absolutely,
it was an amazing way to start our time there. And then we headed off for a very memorable drive.
So yeah, okay, let's go through that drive, because it was very memorable. As you say, we went out and our guide Tolo, great guide, really professional, loved him. You can't say the same thing about every guide, but he was great.
Yeah.
And we went out and we drove kind of into this marshy area, or a drier part of this marshy area that you could drive on. And he was explaining something about a leopard that hangs out in this area to us. And then we kind of turn a corner and
there's a little helicopter there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, cool, a helicopter. Like, good to know. I'll take a picture of it so that if our guests ever want to do helicopters, I can show them like what this one looks like.
Yeah.
Not thinking anything of it.
Yeah. And there was a pilot, the heli pilot, obviously, who was removing the doors from the helicopter, and like it looked like he'd either just landed or something, but you know, again, we didn't think anything of it. And then Tolo, our guide, says, well, do you guys want to go on it?
Like, and I was like, ha ha ha, yeah, sure,
yeah, like half
totally thinking he's joking,
right? Like half booked it. And I just want to explain a little bit about the trip that we're on and what it kind of means. We're doing site visits of these lodges that we're at, not just for fun. Obviously a lot of it is a lot of fun, but it is so that we can explore some of the new areas and the newly kind of done up lodges. You know, like Hadley's been to Kingspool, or Hadley was at Kingspool the last time when she was 12, so, and she wasn't in the safari industry or anything then, so it's nice for us to kind of have these educational visits of these lodges, which we've been invited on by Wilderness Safaris, and they're obviously just trying to show us as much of their product, and I hate using that word, but it is their product on the ground.
As many of their properties.
As many of their properties, their lodges, the areas that the lodges are in as possible. So they invited us to go on a heli flip, which was just insane, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, tell I love going in helicopters.
Yeah.
I've had great experiences in helicopters, and this was up there with one of the best that I've had.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more nervous about helicopters, I would say. I always enjoy myself while I'm up there, but I definitely do get a little bit nervous. My main concern always is that it's going to stress the animals out, and seeing stressed out animals makes me stressed out.
Yeah.
So we realized we're going on this helicopter, and I was so kind of like taken aback. And the first thing I said to the pilot was like, how do the animals respond? Are they not scared of the helicopter? And he said, no, it's pretty incredible. They're really not. Sometimes some of the elephant breeding herds are, but if they are, they will, you know, shake their head or put the tails out. Like, they give us signs that they're agitated, and then I move off straight away, and we don't go any closer to them. And I was like, okay, well, like, that sounds promising, but, like, let's see what it's actually like, because, you know, typically, because a lot of reserves use helicopters for like game capture, or if you have to move an animal or treat an animal that you have to dart from the air, it just, they don't always have the best associations with helicopters.
Yeah, I mean, imagine like how loud is a helicopter to a person, and then imagine you're an elephant whose hearing is like 100 times as good as a human's hearing.
Right, and it's like above
and how
you
loud
from
that,
the sky.
And how loud that must be, and it's from the sky. So it's something that's not just loud, but super unknown as well.
Yeah, and like a little bit scary.
Yeah.
But we get up into the air, and the doors are off, and we get up, and as you're going up, you kind of leave the Mapani woodland is behind you, and the like whole Linyanti, I don't know, like floodplain
marsh yeah,
is in front of you, and you just get so quickly, you get such a scale for how enormous this area is and how many elephants there are. And as we kind of go up into the, or fly over the marsh, and we get over our first breeding herd and then our second, and they are completely calm. Like, one of them will kind of look up or look sideways or take a few steps and look up, but, like, not showing us any signs of agitation. I got emotional again because I was like, oh, my God, like, we're going to get to spend the next 20 minutes looking at elephants from the air and not really bothering them in this unbelievable setting.
Yeah.
It just was an incredible experience.
Totally. And it was nice because we didn't just see elephants. We saw like a big crocodile. We saw some...
So many hippos.
We saw some lechwe, which is this water-adapted antelope fighting, which was really cool. We saw hippos.
One, like, or 10 hippos out of the water.
Yeah, one or two of the hippos were a little bit skittish, but...
They moved away much
faster. The nice thing was that the pilot, the heli pilot also, when he noticed that, he would explain it to us straight away and he would move off straight away. So the heli pilot was very sensitive to the environment. What I loved as well is that Tolo, our guide, was able to come with us, and he had done that once before somewhere else, but I don't necessarily know whether or not he gets invited to do this sort of thing often.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, it was the second one he's ever done.
Yeah, right. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that if you do go on a safari and there is something that you are doing as an experience, just ask your guide if they're keen to join and do it with you, because
chances are they're very keen.
Chances are they're very keen, and it's also a new experience, or it could be something that they haven't done very often. And I mean, once we got off that helicopter, I think everyone had this amazing adrenaline energy, and
we were all just like grinning.
We were all just grinning, and we'd seen a lot of these elephants from the air, but we had another fantastic sighting of them just as the sun was setting, right?
Yeah, so we were like coming, we were all just kind of sitting, we got to the vehicle and we were all just like sitting there in quiet, just kind of trying to process what we'd just taken in. And then we're like, okay, let's just like, let's go to the water, let's have a sundowner, let's just like process what this day has been. And Cholo picked, I mean, the perfect spot, because the elephants, as they'd been explaining to us in the helicopter, the elephants spend the majority of the day in the marsh, feeding on the grass there and drinking water during the heat of the day. And then each evening they leave the marsh, at least now during the dry season, they leave the marsh or the floodplain area, and they go into the Mapani woodland, and that's where they spend the night.
Yeah.
And so we went down to have our sundowner, and we've parked kind of right on the bank of the water, and we see some elephants in one of the, like, channels. What do you call that, a channel?
Yeah,
that
deeper part? It's a main channel on the river system.
And so we see one small family. So within a, like, large breeding herd, you'll have kind of smaller family groups, which would be like a mother, her daughter, and her daughter, or something like that. And so we see this first family of four elephants swimming across one of the channels, and it's deep, so you can just see like a few of their foreheads and the tip of the trunk, and then one younger elephant, you can just see its trunk because it was so deep. And we're like, oh, great, like, how perfect is this? Like, they're going to come right towards us. And that ended up being the tip of the iceberg, because they were just the first of what ended up being like 10 different small subfamilies in this massive breeding herd. And they swam across the channel, and then they kind of came up onto land and walked straight past us. And it was just like...
Yeah, it was amazing. And again, what I liked about it as well is that we'd gone into that area initially to look for a leopard that one of the other guides had seen.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't manage to find it. It's quite a thick area along the river there, and we were totally fine with that. And then we ended up stopping for our sundowner, and then that's what happened. And it was just kind of unexpected to see that, but it was just like the best ending to the day. The next day, I would say we had an equally fantastic morning drive and sighting, because we had quite a unique morning drive and sighting. Again, I mean, we keep saying unique and like special and stuff, but it is every single...
It's this, like, I'm telling you, like, Botswana is just like a superlative safari, because everything is amazing.
It is, yeah. So we had driven out, and we were kind of just following the river system, right? We were kind of just going along the banks of the river and on the like edge of the marsh, I suppose you can say as well. And Cholo told us there's this lion pride that hangs out in this area, and let's see if we can find it. And we did find it, which was great, because we were seeing them as they were just starting to settle down for the day, but they were still active for...
And there were a lot of youngsters also, so they were still a little bit rambunctious and playing and rolling around and...
Yeah, there were like, what, five youngsters and three adults or something?
Yeah, I think there were only two females, but one was missing.
Sure.
So I think the Pride has three adult females, but we only saw two.
Yeah.
But they were like grooming each other over and over and over again, getting lots of great photos and videos. And then we noticed, and there was one of them that was so funny, it just kept staring at us.
Yeah.
This
making very good eye contact.
So funny.
We noticed, I don't know if this is what you want to say, but that they
exactly
that they smelled.
So they kept grooming each other, like licking, one lion would lick the other's face and back and forth. And we were like, man, like, they stink.
Yeah.
What the heck is that smell? And we were kind of wondering, is there something in the area? And then we realized it was actually their breath.
Yeah.
And Chola, I mean, it was Chola who said it. It was such a great call. He was like, no, I think it's their breath that we're smelling.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know if he'd heard or had just seen the vultures and thought that there was a carcass in the area, but...
I think he knew about it.
Yeah.
I don't think that necessarily, like, a carcass isn't the most pleasant thing to be around. And... We drove to where we saw the vulture, drove in just kind of, I'm going to say 50 meters or like 150 feet away from the water. And in this thicket, there was a dead elephant, an elephant carcass. And it was smelly, but we were able to...
We were so lucky.
We were very lucky. We were able to park kind of upwind from it.
I mean, totally upwind. Like, it was...
Yeah.
You would occasionally the wind would change and you would get a little bit of a whiff, but for the most part, you basically just couldn't smell it.
Yeah, and the reason that we parked there was that there was another lion, also from this pride, a youngster, that was actually feeding on the elephant. And it's quite a gruesome thing to see because, you know, an elephant is obviously big. This wasn't a big adult elephant, but it was a subadult. And
it's still an enormous
It's an enormous
animal.
Thing and it had lots and lots of like maggots and stuff on it.
Yeah, I didn't
it was,
look at the maggots.
It was decomposing, like the stomach contents had spilled out or been dragged out by the lions or maybe hyena or something. But this one young lion was very much feeding on the remaining scraps of good meat that were part of the like hind leg or front leg of the elephant, and that was an absolute scene to behold because this elephant this lion was really tucking in and it seemed like really enjoying it, even though
my goodness, I was surprised by how difficult it looked. I mean, you think like an elephant, wow, imagine that's so much meat for so many lions, but then actually seeing this subadult or juvenile lion try and feed on it, it was a lot of energy and getting through the skin, like the skin was so thick, the hide of the elephant was so thick that it was just really interesting watching and seeing the different vultures that were flying over. And then she finished feeding. It was starting to get a little bit warmer and went down to drink. But the pride was still maybe like 300 meters down the river at that point.
Yeah.
And then she started contact calling, which is, I think we talked about that in the last
episode. We did.
Yeah. Which was really fun. So we knew that she was going to find them because they were so close. So we followed her back down to the river, she drank, kept contact calling, and then two of her siblings came and found her, and when they saw each other, they ran at each other and had this little play session, which was really cute. And then
one of the old, like, I think it was an older
another older
member of the pride,
subadult, whatever,
it doesn't matter, went to the carcass and started feeding again, and we watched again how this other adult or subadult started feeding, and this one wasn't feeding for that long. It then went to different parts of the carcass and was like sniffing them to see whether it was able to eat them or feed on them. But like you could see it like really wrinkle its nose at certain parts of the carcass.
Yeah, like a little kid that was like offered a piece of asparagus and it was like, ugh.
Yeah.
It like sniffed the elephant, like it was actually by where the elephant's tail is. It like sniffed something there and then wrinkled its nose and recoiled like, oh,
Yeah, yeah.
Like bad meat.
No, absolutely. It was just so cool to see that. The rest of our, I'm going to just, because we're kind of running out of time a little bit, but I'm going to just say that the rest of our time at King's Pool was also phenomenal. We were able to see another lodge in the area.
And what bird did you see?
What bird did I see? Oh my God, yeah.
So on the last morning, which was yesterday morning, we went for a drive into the Mopani, and I think that Tolo decided to do that because it was a little bit cooler. And he just wanted to show us a different part. We'd seen a lot of the river and the water. And he just wanted to show us a different part
of the reserve, and the Mopani can be, when it's summer and it's hot and dry, a little bit boring, but it's nice when it's cooler in the morning. And that's when we went out there, and I said to Hadley, I think on the drive in the morning, I'd said to her, look at these tall Mopani trees. This is a great area to see this bird. This bird is called an Arno's chat, and I've wanted to see Arno's chat for a very, very long time. In fact, since I worked at Makuleki in the Northern Kruger, where you get this bird, which is a bird that is really only found in this mature Mopani woodland, I've wanted to see it, and it's been my bogey bird. It's been a bird that I've just never found anywhere.
Yeah, and a bogey bird is a bird, just to clarify, that that kind of by all intents and purposes you should have seen. Like, you've worked in an area where it occurs, you've birded for it, you've really looked for it, and somehow it's kind of escaped you.
Right, exactly. And anyway, we were driving along, and there were these big tall Mopani trees, and then on a termite mound at the base of one of these tall Mopanis is this little black and white bird.
Mm.
And finally, I can say I saw it, and I don't know if it sounds like anything exciting to people who are listening, but to me it's a big thing, because...
Well, it is a big thing, because you've seen a lot of birds, so...
Yeah, it is. It's getting more difficult to find new birds,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not a person who just does it because they want to tick birds off their list. This is just a bird that I've wanted to see because it's synonymous with Mopani woodland,
mm-hmm.
and I love Mopani woodland because it's just a very... you know, unique arid savanna species
yeah.
that you find, the tree, I mean, now, and then as a bird that's just synonymous with that, it's, yeah,
yeah.
it's very cool. So
that was like a little cherry on top,
yeah,
to end off our time.
Yeah, icing on the cake.
Yeah.
And, right, so then we are now at Vumbura, and we can't wait to record the next episode, because this is a place that is...
Mental.
I really hope that you guys enjoyed this episode. The next episode is going to be even more mental, I suppose.
Like,
there's the sightings here have just been ridiculous. Stay tuned, and
yeah, let us know what you think.
Yeah, see you all soon.